As always, the opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of DKI APCSS, the U.S. Department of Defense, or the U.S. government.
Malaysia has always used a combination of diplomatic, legal, and military measures. I admit the military measures part is really not really in the forefront, and we normally actually use diplomacy as our main way of actually dealing with situation and avoiding any escalation with large powers.
Aloha and welcome to Dialogue, where conversations shape security. I'm your host, James Minnick, Colonel United States Army, retired, and professor here at the Daniel K. Inouye Asia Pacific Center for Security Studies in Honolulu, Hawaii. This is episode 40, Malaysia's Maritime Shield. Malaysia's maritime domain is under constant pressure. Foreign vessels encroach into its waters, maritime militias operate with impunity, and the risk of escalation looms. These are not isolated incidents. They're part of a broader, calculated strategy that challenges Malaysia's sovereignty, economic security, and regional stability. Let's be clear. Malaysia's maritime territory is more than a geographic expanse. It's a lifeline. The Malacca Strait, one of the world's busiest shipping lanes, carries trillions of dollars in global trade every year. A disruption here wouldn't just affect Malaysia. It would send shockwaves through the global economy. Yet this vital artery is increasingly vulnerable. Piracy, smuggling, and geopolitical maneuvering threaten its security. Then there's the South China Sea, a contested high-stakes maritime theater. Malaysia's exclusive economic zone faces persistent incursions. Foreign coast guards and maritime militias aren't simply testing boundaries. They're actively reshaping realities on the water. These gray zone tactics fall below the threshold of war, but they pose a constant challenge to Malaysia's sovereignty. Beyond security concerns, Malaysia's economic future is at stake. The blue economy, fisheries, offshore energy, and marine industries drive national prosperity. But illegal fishing fleets, often backed by state actors, are depleting resources and threatening livelihoods. This isn't just an economic issue. It's a long-term strategic threat. To counter these challenges, Malaysia is building its maritime shield, a multi-layered defense strategy to safeguard its waters. This includes enhanced surveillance and patrols to deter incursions, investment in advanced technology for better maritime domain awareness, and stronger regional partnerships to ensure collective security. But is this enough? Can Malaysia, a middle power, effectively counter the assertiveness of larger nations? The answers have far-reaching consequences, not just for Malaysia, but for the entire Indo-Pacific. The region's stability, the security of global trade, and the preservation of international law all hang in the balance. To explore these issues further, we're joined by Noor Aini Binti Mohammed Norden, Assistant Director of Maritime Security at the Malaysian Institute of Defense and Security, MIDAS. She's a rising young leader in maritime strategy, shaping Malaysia's defense policies and analyzing key security trends. Aini, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you, James. Thank you, James. I'm glad to be here and honored.
We're super glad to have you here. And you know, I've expressed to you our my personal disappointment. We tried to have you here, have you in the studio, but you've been a tremendous guest, and thank you for coming in online and to be able to sit down and have this dialogue together.
Thank you, James.
I like to start every show with inviting the guest to share their story and tell us how you came into this field and into this area of expertise. So please share your story with us.
Okay. For information and also information to the audience, I'm actually not exactly from any international relation or even a maritime security background. I actually started as an engineer. to be precise, an electrical electronic engineer. And then I joined the government and started my government career at the district and land office, followed by a short, not really short, stint at the state secretary office doing economic planning unit involving entrepreneurs. And we talk about economy, I guess I could say my knowledge of economy comes from there. And then I became the director of a public library corporation, state public library, very far off from doing economy at that time. And then I joined the federal ministry, which is the Ministry of Defense. And I had a chance working in policy before joining the Malaysian Institute of Defense and Security. And coincidentally, I was actually the desk for US-Malaysia bilateral.
You know, when you start relation. Off with, I've got a degree in electrical engineering, I mean, it just echoes the, you know, your degree of intelligence. When I think of tough degrees, that one is right at the top. And so it just shows that you have a very quick and incisive mind. And so without a doubt, your transitioning over into this field, you know, was predicated on, you know, rich studying, deep studying, and a hard degree on your way here. That's fascinating.
Thank you. It has been enriching, starting from bottom at the district, then to the state, and then to the federal. You have a wide variety of, experience.
Without a doubt, you know, that
these
varied backgrounds, even the one, you know, you describe of yourself, helps us be more critical thinking and thinkers. Sure. as we you know, analyze these different challenges, many of them we're going to talk about here today, but this comes from an incisive mind, and so the ability to do that, and so this is going to be a great discussion. I'm really excited to sit down today.
Thank you, James.
So with that, let's start the conversation, and let's start with defending sovereignty in the South China Sea. And so I spoke a little bit about that as we started, but Malaysia, I mean, it faces growing challenges in protecting its EEZ, its exclusive economic zone, particularly in disputed waters, which, you know, waters that that are yours. And so here's the question then, let me put it this way. How does Malaysia assert its sovereignty while avoiding escalation with larger powers?
Well, James, I think if we really look into the news announced or even social media, Malaysia has always used a combination of diplomatic, legal, and military measures. I admit the military measures part is really not really in the forefront. And we normally actually use diplomacy as our main way of actually dealing with situation and avoiding any escalation with large powers. So, first and foremost, I would like to state that Malaysia actually prioritizes multilateral engagement. However, at times, we do in Malaysia utilize, some would say, a backdoor or quiet diplomacy, which essentially is a bilateral engagement. So this approach over the years have proven and shown it's quite effective for Malaysia. So, in terms of legal means, I would say that as reported, we submitted our continental shelf claim to the UN Commission on the limit of the continental shelf. And in addition, Malaysia has also fought multiple diplomatic protests, especially when talk about incursion into our EEZ. So, and in the last, I would say in the last year or so, China actually published a new map. I'm sure the world knows about the 10-dash line, and we actually rejected that map. And the reaffirming our territorial claims and commitment to international law, and we actually highlighted this. In terms of, you know, the diplomatic note that was leaked in September 2024, our Prime Minister stated that Malaysia would continue its resource exploration within its EEZ and emphasized that these activities were not intended to provoke any countries. So, Even in 2024, last year in October, we had the first bilateral dialogue in management of maritime issue in the South China Sea with China. And I mentioned earlier, we do use bilateral means when trying to handle the situations or manage it, for that matter. And we discuss on the maritime situation and promote practical cooperation between the two nations. And again, we go through the diplomatic channel when we protest Philippines' enactment of the two new maritime law, asserting that it encroaches upon Malaysia territorial boundaries. So overall, if we look into the news or reported by the media, even on social media for that matter, Malaysia has always resolved to handle or manage situation through diplomacy or legal means. That's the foremost method that we use. However, at the same time, does not mean that we are timid. We still have military presence that we maintain in our EEZ through routine patrol and surveillance, while at the same time avoiding provocative actions that could escalate with larger powers, as you mentioned earlier, like China, for the example. So this incident, actually, as you mentioned earlier, we use multifaceted approach when dealing with the situation. It's not just one way approach. It depends on the situation, how things are occurring over in South China Sea, especially. So we try to balance diplomatic engagement, legal assertion, as well as continuing our maritime presence within recognized territorial
boundaries. When I think about countries in the region that are very methodical about their, you know, how to respond from, you know, action to reaction, and understanding that continuum of activity. I mean, Malaysia is all, you know, it comes to my mind that they're constantly thinking about what their response may trigger, and therefore how to be very thoughtful in the way they respond. I mean, Malaysia, you know, a country with about 34 million people in a region that has very large countries. Obviously, China the largest, but clearly Indonesia very large, or
yes,
Thailand,
true.
Or on and on. And so it is not about, it's not adequate to just, you know, take offense and do something. It is a very methodical process that I've come to realize that Malaysia kind of approaches these issues with.
True. That's true.
I think, when I think about even the back in 2016, when the Court of Arbitration had ruled on the nine-dash line, and I mean, Malaysia didn't immediately jump on that and say, see, look, 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 look. I mean, they took a very, right?
Yeah. Obviously, we can't do that. We have to be very careful, as I've actually talked to you earlier. We're being very pragmatic in our approach, cautious even, looking at how, you know, the country in question reacts and what is the
Maybe
best way
it would take
to
a little bit of
what
you spoke about. And I want to talk a little bit about this gray zone tactics, particularly countering them. And You know, foreign actors, without a doubt, they're increasingly using coercion, maritime militias, artificial island expansion. I mean, all these things to, you know, influence in this, exert their influence in this contested area. And so, as you think about this, here's the question. How does Malaysia respond to these gray zone challenges without triggering open conflict? And you know, these come in maybe you might even elucidate some of the gray zone challenges that you experience, and then what you do to try to, you know, to keep from, in your response, from triggering these, you know, conflict from these things.
Okay. When we talk about gray zone tactics, right? I think Malaysia is quite fortunate that we actually decided in, you know, publishing our defense white paper. And if you read through the paper, it actually stated that Malaysia response focuses on non-military deterrence strategic partnership and enhanced maritime surveillance. And we also achieved this through interagency cooperation between the Royal Malaysian Navy, the Malaysian Maritime Enforcement Agency and other security agencies to counter any maritime militia or even foreign aggression. So again, in the paper, we already stated that it's more like an emphasis is being made that diplomacy is our first line of defense, and it has been enhanced through efforts such as through ASEAN-led mechanism, regional capacity building initiative, especially the five-power defense arrangement,
yeah, let's
FPD,
on
that we
this
have
a little bit,
has been our long-standing arrangement.
So the defense white papers published in
2020
went into effect in 2021, right?
Yes, correct.
And then the Five Powers Act, maybe just to explain a little bit what you're referring to there.
Okay, the five. Power defense arrangement is a arrangement that dated back actually even before our independence, and the members are mostly Commonwealth country, which is near to us, UK for that matter, Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore is our partners. So there's five country nations there, and we even have a base with an Australian leader in Penang Air Base. So in that sense, it's a long-standing arrangement that we have for Malaysia in terms of defense. So we value that arrangement very much. So in that five-power defense arrangement, there's actually a capacity-building initiative whereby we do exercise regularly with our partners, especially on matters pertaining to issues in Malacca Strait, especially maritime exercise and even mostly military exercise, basically. We do even have policy discussion with them, our counterparts. So it goes even as high up as our Ministry of Defense having, you know, five eyes, actually, talking to each other. And it actually changes who actually hosts the discussion. So basically, if we talk about five power defense arrangement, FPDA, we, no matter what policy we have, we always put it inside our papers, whether it's the defense white paper or even the prior policy, national defense policy.
You had
so,
mentioned, you know,
it's a very important
the Royal Navy,
arrangement.
You also
for
mentioned
us.
The Malaysian Maritime
Enforcement Agency. Yes.
That's your Coast Guard or equivalent.
Yes, correct.
Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And we recently. Had the act in the late 2000. So basically, what we do have here in Malaysia, if we really look into it, it's not a single approach. I mean, no one works in silo. We've realized that it's not productive at all. So we've decided that, you know, we need to have some kind of cooperation going on between the RMN, the MMEA, and the police marine. Even the Department of Fisheries. So through this interagency cooperation, we've seen that there's a lot of changes happened, whereby then we're going to have to talk about, you know, the effectiveness of how this interagency cooperation has done, especially in areas like the Malacca Strait. So again, going back to your question about how we respond, it's about, you know, working together. It's about cooperation. You can't really do things in silo, especially when you talk about gray zone tactics. So it's very important to have a multilateral approach,
kind
so,
of examples, right?
So
yeah.
You mentioned earlier
give
that
an example
on
maybe
the
I would
share some
eight.
Incident where we had a Chinese survey vessel actually detected conducting operation within our exact near our oil exploration areas. So what we did was we did not try to make it into a very, very big incident. What we did was we launched a formal diplomatic protest, but at the same time, we actually deployed our naval as well as our Coast Guard assets to actually monitor the situation. When we had the formal diplomatic protest, we also used bilateral means to actually, have a discussion on what's going on and all that. So this incident actually really highlight how Malaysia rely both on legal and diplomatic mechanism actually to counter grey zone threats, while actually at the same time preventing direct military escalation. So again, goes back to, the first question you had with me that you asked.
No,
It goes back to
absolutely.
diplomacy.
You spoke a bit about the Malacca Strait, so I want to pull on that a little bit more and talk about securing of the Malacca Strait. I mean, and I mentioned even in the introduction about how this is a vital global trade artery, but it's also a hotspot for, piracy and smuggling and illicit activities. And so it is a important area that has, it can be a bit of a bad neighborhood at times. And so what measures is Malaysia taking specifically, then, that you might be able to share with us about securing this critical maritime corridor that so much of our, international trade goes through?
Okay, I'm going to make some correction there, James.
Okay, go
When we
ahead.
talk about Malacca Strait, I think it has been quite some time, years in fact, that there's a lot, because you highlighted there's a lot of issues going on there, about, piracy and all that. But please, let me correct that, because in Malacca Strait, we have MSP, which is actually Malacca Strait Patrol. So it's a joint initiative that Malaysia did with Indonesia and Singapore originally, and now Thailand has came on board to conduct a coordinated air and sea patrol. So if you look at the report by IMO and as well as RICAP, it indicated that there was zero piracy incident from 2020 to 2022, and there was only 5 cases in 2023. And if we really look at 2024, there's only one case at the end of the year, which happened on 28th December. And that was a robber, five-armed robber, actually stealing spare engines from a bulk carrier without actually, harming the crews. So if we really look at the statistic, I don't think
I
that
think
we can
trying to
say that
spare
Malacca
it probably harkening
Strait is
back to my
actually
time there
dangerous
25
at
years
all.
ago, but you continue.
Okay,
I
but
think you're
yeah, if
closer,
it's 25
right?
years ago, I understand. But yeah, in since we actually introduced Malacca Strait
Say
Patrol,
a little bit
I
more
think
about the
it
Malacca
has
Strait
made
Patrol.
tremendous changes
I
there. So
mean, this is a what four countries that contribute to, but say more.
correct. So basically, we have as I mentioned earlier, it started with Malaysia, Indonesia, and Singapore. And then we had Thailand, who saw how effective Malacca Strait Patrol was, and they came on board. So when we do a con we conduct coordinated air and sea patrol together, it not only helps interaction
So
between
that
all
information sharing is
countries,
actually
it also
critical
helps
with
when we talk
information
about,
sharing.
safety. Safety of navigation, talking about piracy and all that. So with this kind of coordinated information sharing happening with all four countries that are, involved, if you look at the Strait of Malacca, it started with Thailand on the top in the north. And then we have Malaysia and Indonesia in between that strait. And then we have Singapore at the south. So it's very, if you look at it geographically, it's very effective. When you have four countries working together there, doing coordinated patrols so that, if let's say there was an information set sh saying that, okay, there's a suspicious vessel coming. So if that vessel actually ran, not only ran, I mean like the vessel actually, moved towards a different territory, let's say from Malaysia to Indonesia, we can actually effectively transmit information to the Indonesian side. And they can actually, catch the vessel or even apprehend the vessel. So it's very fast when you have a coordinated patrol happening, information sharing happening. So we even have the another initiative under the ASEAN Lab mechanism, which is the eye in the sky, that also helps with this information sharing
Let's pull just a
and,
little bit more then on
intelligence
this
sharing
strengthening
between
regional
countries.
maritime cooperation. I mean, you explained about the Malacca Strait Patrol, but you also spoke about the eye in the sky. So Say a little bit more about that as you, in this response about, the effectiveness of, this regional partnership in addressing these maritime threats. Maybe you might just share a little
So
bit more on that.
basically, the eye in the sky is actually a joint area surveillance to enhance security. So this was actually introduced under the ADMM, but it started under the Malacca Strait Patrol. So it helps a lot when it comes to when you have an aerial joint surveillance. Just now we were talking about patrol, which happens on the at the sea level, and then we have an aerial surveillance happening. So that really helps, covering both air and sea, area of the Malacca Strait. So I don't think there is a better way than having both. As you know, maritime is not just we're talking about sea; we're talking about the airspace as well.
We are.
So having both, sea and air surveillance going on, it really helps to actually lessen the incident happening in Malacca Strait. And in fact, it really helps a lot that the incident had drilled down to single digits. So that shows how important it is to cooperate, especially when you have an area where it's very congested with trade, so, trade going on there, especially ships going there. So it's an important, as you mentioned earlier, a lifeline or supply chain, for that matter, between the east and the west. So Malacca Strait is an important place where things happens and trades going on and a lot of money going through, passing through the strait. So it's very important for countries involved to actually secure the straits. So I think that what we already have or what we've implemented, which is the Malacca Strait Patrol, has shown its effectiveness. And when we talk about Malacca Strait Patrol, we also have to say thank you for the maritime domain awareness that is actually under maritime initiative under the United States as well. So it will also help us in the sense that, when we talk about maritime domain awareness, we had also had assistance from United States, especially in terms of drones and radar system. But at the same time, we also, as a nation, plan to increase our maritime domain awareness by investing in the same thing, like coastal radar system, drones, satellite technology to monitor maritime traffic and detect any illicit activities. At the same time, it's not just the Malacca Strait patrols that are actually collaborating with us. We also have collaboration with international entities to combat piracy, smuggling, and terrorism through information sharing and capacity building programs. So that is some of the few
You say a
things
little
that
bit
are
more about this
happening
technology
when it comes to
with
Malacca
the
Strait.
MDA, the Maritime Domain and Awareness. I mean, you rightly noted that this is much more than just being on the sea, in the air. But this technology, I mean, it's found in fusion centers and AI, which is really advancing these
Yes.
days. And to think about where it's going to go, but it's going to be critically important in the ability to analyze, the information that comes in, and they'll be able to do it at a much greater rate, I would imagine, than what individuals at a monitor can do. But maybe you might give us some insight on how Malaysia is leveraging this technology in enhancing these patrols and its
Okay,
enforcement even going.
I think it's quite I think the world knows already, probably. Recently, our Prime Minister actually announced our cooperation with arms chips. So we're looking into that. But at the same time, at our defense level, we are actually looking into and studying more about how we can utilize AI in defense. So that is still at the preliminary stage. So probably it will be highlighted in the defense white paper. But actually, if you really look at the defense white paper, you can see there's a one chapter whole on the defense industry cooperation, defense industry going on there. So actually, we've talked about technology, in fact, in there. So I think when we look into the matter of using utilizing technology, Malaysia has actually quite a foresight, I would say. We've actually think about this about 5 years back, and we're trying to figure out because, as you said, technology changes. First, we had quantum, and then now we have AI. So what made it easier for us when we published that defense white paper, even make it effective, is that we did not constrain ourselves, you know, in the wording we use. So it helps when we don't have a constraint for us to actually embark and actually studies on how we can actually use the emerging technologies that is coming out in our maritime domain, and how can we utilize those technologies in defense itself. So I think having a white paper actually did help us. And if you look at it, we even have an increase in budget, defense budget for that matter, that also helped in contributing for us to actually do a study on this.
That's fascinating.
And how to utilize it.
I want to pull a little bit more on these, you know, and responding to these non-traditional threats. You know, illegal fishing, I alluded to a little bit in the opening, but if I'm remembering right, I mean, the scope of this is fairly massive. I mean, it's like half a billion to $1 billion of loss in this area from illegal fishing and stuff. But in the same lines of that illegal fishing, all these other different types of illegalities occur, human trafficking occur, drugs occur, all these things go through similar lines. And so maybe how is it that you know, that Malaysia is actions that are taken to combat these types of threats in their waters. And as you rightly note, things have gotten so much better over time, but maybe you might share a little bit with that.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with human trafficking, or
yeah.
I would say it's also in relation with kidnapping for ransom. That's also falls under non-traditional maritime threats. So, if you remember back in early 2000 and all that, there's a lot of incident occurring in Sulu and Celibacy, right? Especially in terms of kidnapping for ransom. So at that time, during 2017, I guess, we established TCAA with Indonesia and Philippines, which is a trilateral cooperative agreement that focuses on the securing our maritime areas in the Sulu and Celibacy. So that collaboration has enhanced joint patrol and real-time information sharing, which effectively curb transnational crimes such as smuggling and kidnapping for ransom. So if you look at prior to 2017, there was about 16 reported cases of crew abduction in Sulu Sulawesi Sea region. And following the initiation of the TCA in 2017, the incidence shows a significant decline. So notably, the last recorded abduction occurred in January 2020. And since then, there has been no such incident reported up to December 2024. This goes back to my earlier comment about how you need to do things cooperatively. So you can't do things in silo. So basically, you need partners to actually handle issue in such as maritime threat. So that is on human trafficking. So when we talk about illegal fishing, or IUU for that matter, so for Malaysia, we have actually in 2004, before 2004, we did not have our Coast Guard or MMEA for that matter. So we actually create an act, which is the Malaysia Maritime Enforcement Agency Act, Act 633, in 2004. And currently we have National Plan of Action to prevent, deter and eliminate IUU, which is under the Department of Fishery of Malaysia. And recently there's been an announcement at the end of last year that the Department of Fishery is actually going to review their act as well to impose more penalties. So that is one of the way in terms of legal framework enhancements that Malaysia is doing. So in terms of institutional strengthening, when we talk about institutional strengthening, I go back to, you know, how I told you that MMEA is kind of recent, 2004, it was established. So we are currently, the Malaysia Coast Guard is actually working together and with international counterpart like the United States Coast Guard, as well as the Japan Japan Coast Guard to enhance its operational capabilities. And we also have a specialized unit. So Malaysia, due to this, as you mentioned, there's a lot of waste, not really waste, a lot of losses going on when we talk about IUU. So, and as well as smuggling of person. So Malaysia has a specialized unit. It created a dedicated unit to actually, within enforcement actually, such as the special unit on anti-trafficking in person, which is under the Immigration Department, the Royal Malaysia Custom, as well as the Maritime Enforcement Agency, specifically to tackle human trafficking issues. So apart from that, under the ASEAN as well mechanism, when we talk about IUU fishing, there's already a mechanism in place whereby the ASEAN member state agreed to actually work on the IUU issues. So in terms of, there's another thing when we talk about maritime, right, it's environmental crimes. So when we talk about marine biodiversity, it's very crucial. So under the ASEAN as well, we have also addressed issue on marine biodiversity. So I think when we look at it as a whole, I think ASEAN have done a great job. And Malaysia has also participated in that to handle the issue of non-traditional maritime threats. So it's not just about illegal fishing. Although illegal fishing is important, we also need to talk about marine biodiversity. Otherwise,
that's well
we won't
noted
have
and
fishes
well
there.
Stated. I have learned a tremendous amount. I didn't even know things I didn't know until we started talking. I want to think about the future now. You've really elucidated where we're at. But as we think about, and in fact, in your own comments earlier, you had talked about how prescient Malaysia had been, even in the writing 5 years ago of its white papers. And so as we think towards this future, what are strategic shifts that you see that Malaysia should consider to strengthen this maritime shield, as I've called it, in the years going forward? Where do you see this going?
Okay. Actually, I have to go again. We have to go back to our defense white paper again, because that is the mother document for everything that we do. So I've mentioned earlier that we're also in the middle of our midterm review with the situation, ongoing situation going on geopolitically across the region, as well in the across the world. So in order to adapt to the evolving maritime challenges, so we actually have a strategic shift. First is modernizing our naval capabilities. So when we talk about modernizing our naval capabilities, we're talking about fleet modernization. So one of the things that we've done is actually accelerating the acquisition and deployment of advanced naval vessel, which includes our Maharaja Lela class frigates and littoral mission ship to enhance maritime defense and patrol capabilities. At the same time, we are also investing in multi-role support ship to improve rapid response and logistical support during maritime operation, as well as strengthening our cyber electronic warfare capabilities by investing in, again, as I mentioned earlier, we were talking about emerging technologies, AI. So we've actually started talking about, you know, investing AI-driven cybersecurity system to counter emerging threats. So that is one. Then we have the enhancing surveillance and technology integration. So right now we are trying to expand the use of UAVs for persistent maritime surveillance and enabling real-time monitoring of our territorial waters. So at the same time, while doing that, we are also implementing integrated sensor system, including satellite-based monitoring to detect and respond to unauthorized activities swiftly. So these are few things that we're doing when it comes to capabilities. Again, as I mentioned earlier, and time again during all your question, is about cooperation. So Malaysia can't run away from cooperating with regional entities such as the ASEAN collaboration, which is whereby Malaysia actually participate actively. And this year we were chairman of ASEAN. So we have done several initiatives to address regional security concerns, as I mentioned earlier, under ASEAN. So this include the South China Sea situation through diplomatic engagement, as well as joint exercises. And I think this has been reported quite widely in the media as well on what we're doing under ASEAN ambit. So as the chairman of ASEAN, and our prime minister actually announced and stated this as well, that we will be working with ASEAN members and China to expedite the establishment of a binding code of conduct for the South China Sea to reduce the risk of conflicts. So when we talk about that, we also need to talk about, when talk about cooperation, we also need to talk about climate resilience. So when we talk about climate resilience, we also been trying to develop response strategy for climate-induced disaster, like rising sea level and extreme weather affecting coastal security. So as a nation, which is a maritime nation, we can't run away from climate issues or changes that has been going on, especially in terms of rising sea levels. So we are also diversifying our defense cooperation as well with Japan, India, and with ASEAN Plus members, which US is also part of, and China is also part of, and India as well, and Japan. And we are also reinforcing our role in international maritime security discussion. So if you look at it, we're trying to, the way we're tackling this is we're aiming to future-proof our maritime security against geopolitical shift, as well as technology disruption and climate challenges. So we believe that these are the ways forward for us in actually tackling all these three issues. So again, going back,
yeah,
if you, we really can't get anything this, done without cooperation,
it ends mm-hmm. with cooperation.
No, without a doubt. I mean, Malaysia is a medium country surrounded by many other countries, and it is going to be cooperative if it's going to be successful. I would have to agree. We've got a number of audience questions, and so maybe we'll go ahead and transition to take some of those now. You rightly noted that in January you took over the ASEAN chair. And so this first question is asking a bit about ASEAN. And so it's asking about strengthening ASEAN security. And you even spoke a little bit about it, but maybe you might address this deeper. What steps can be taken to strengthen the regional maritime security architecture, particularly through ASEAN? And so maybe you might say a little bit more on that.
So I mentioned a lot about cooperation just now, right? And ASEAN is essential when it comes to strengthening our regional maritime security architecture. So, but at the same time, adhering to international law is just as important. So first is enhancing information sharing. So we already have a mechanism, existing mechanism, like and direct intelligence exchanges among ASEAN states. And what we need to do now is to strengthen that existing mechanism that we have. So that's one of the key steps that needs to be taken. Second could be expanding the Malacca Strait Patrol and the trilateral cooperative arrangement in the Sulu Sea. So I believe recently there has been steps taken towards that way. Which is strengthening joint maritime patrol. So that is already underway. The next one is the third one is the COC. And I believe our prime minister, as I mentioned earlier, has already stated, and it's not only our prime minister, our foreign minister have stated this again and again, is ensuring progress on the ASEAN-China COC for the South China Sea. Fourth would be capacity building and training. This one, we've been doing it, but I think there's more that can be done. As you know, people change. The people participating in those exercises changes. So a regular joint naval and Coast Guard exercises under the ADMM Plus, something that needs to be conducted regularly. So another thing that can be done is leveraging ASEAN-led frameworks. So when we talk about ASEAN-led
ADMM Plus, ASEAN I should
Regional Forum,
for
and
those that
ADMM
may not know, we're talking
Plus.
About the ASEAN Defense Minister meeting
Yes, correct.
plus this, but
Plus
continue,
countries,
please.
yeah. So, there is a group called the EWG. So, under the EWG, there is one group that's concentrated on maritime security. So, when we talk about strengthening maritime security architecture, maybe initiatives done
And
under
those are
those
the, I
maritime
think, the expert
EWG
working
on maritime
groups.
security can be strengthened as well
And so there are
under the
several of them
ADMM Plus.
under the
Yeah,
ADMM
under the
Plus. So this is
ADMM
one of them that
Plus.
you're referring to.
Yes, as well as the ASEAN Regional Forum
That's right.
that can be strengthened. Okay.
No. Fascinating. I often worry that an expert like yourself speaking on a topic, there's these acronyms we use over and over, and others are
Yes,
like,
I'm so sorry about
I wonder what
that.
that acronym is. And ARF is the ASEAN Regional Forum, and I guess that's one of the larger one that brings
Yes,
any
correct.
other
Where we
country.
have people from where we can actually dialogue about things, you know, sensitive
Sensitive
media giving
issues
talks, where we
in
can
an
actually
actually open
dialogue
setting.
about things, you know,
Yeah. No, in
sensitive
fact,
issues
even on the
in a much more open
ADMM plus
setting. Yeah.
EWG is the working group. So we often
Yes.
host those here at APCSS,
Correct.
Maritime is one of those that we've hosted here. This
Okay.
next question, let's go to it. It's asking about the East South Asia cooperation. And so the question is, how can East Asia and South Asian nations work together to enhance maritime cooperation? Thoughts on that?
I think when we talk about East Asian, South Asian nation maritime cooperation, I think the most important thing that practical to be done would be blue economy cooperation. So I think that one would not, you know, ruffle feathers as well. So probably in enhancing sustainable fishery management as well as marine research, that's one area in blue economy cooperation that can be done. Next one could be infrastructure and connectivity. Probably strengthening ASEAN India or ASEAN Japan maritime transport links because both nations passes through our strait and our sea. So that's one area that can be, you know, enhanced. Another could be the maritime domain awareness collaboration, you know, probably expanding joint information sharings or intelligence sharing or surveillance operation. Those are the area that I think that could possibly be done in terms of enhancing maritime cooperation between the
This
with
next
the East
question
Asia
actually
as
gets a
well as the
little
South Asian.
specific. It's asking about resolving maritime disputes, but it's very specifically asking, how does Malaysia approach maritime border disputes with China and Indonesia? And then in your answer, you might even explain a little bit about these disputes.
Okay, I think I've touched a bit on the dis I wouldn't call it a dispute, because we believe that what we have or the border we have is our border. So, when we talk about, you know, maritime borders with China and Indonesia, with China, we actually focus or we actually put more emphasis on adhering to UNCLOS,
Which
which is
meant
it,
on the
you know, Law of the
arms
Sea,
law, I see.
Law of the Sea.
Which came
So,
into effect in 1982.
yeah, correct. It's back dated back in 19. And we continue diplomatic effort while conducting EEZ patrols and assert our sovereign right. But at the same time, I've actually talked about, you know, bilateral engagement. And Malaysia has, as I've stated, it depends on which country we're dealing with and who is the person we're talking to. So with China, we've actually, over the years, based on our experience, we noticed that it's best to work bilaterally with them. So that is one of the way we handle the situation when it comes to the South China Sea with China. With Indonesia, it's the same. We use bilateral means, diplomacy. And we have an ongoing negotiation addressing maritime boundaries dispute, particularly in the Embalet region. We have successfully avoided military escalation. We have opened an option, which is a joint resource development, which is an option. But again, when we talk about boundary with Indonesia, it has been going on well. We have a few more that is underway that needs to be talked about, although it's not under the purview of my ministry, which is the Ministry of Defense, but that is an ongoing negotiation. And some of it has been settled, and we have a few more, a couple more, I
Nicely,
guess,
nicely handled.
that
Thank
needs
you.
to be
This
sought
next
out.
question is asking about PRC, China's port influence. And so it's asking, what do PRC-owned port holdings, what impact do they have on, access for U.S. and other partner nation ships into the areas?
I was surprised. To get this question, James, because I was like wondering, do we have a port that belongs to China here in Malaysia? No, we don't. We don't have a port here in Malaysia that is fully owned by the People Republic of China or PRC for that matter. So our ports, in terms of ports, sovereignty, Malaysia authorities retain operation control over all the ports in Malaysia. So US and any allied ship have continued scheduled port calls at Lumut, Kota Kinabalu, and other Malaysia facilities. In terms of infrastructure strategy, we have partnership with Japan, EU, and US to balance our foreign investment. However, there is one port in Malaysia that Chinese companies, it's not PRC for that matter, I just want to clear that. It's not PRC. They have a 40% stake in it. However, the 60% stake is still owned by Malaysia. So it was actually an initiative under the BRI that support industrial projects under the Malaysia-China Kuantan Industrial Park, MCKIP. So if we talk about PRC-owned port holding, as I stated, there's none.
Yeah,
So
no.
Malaysia
So,
fully owned
given
all our
you
ports.
know the nature of what's being discussed in international news about PRC port holdings, I don't know that I was surprised to see a question like this, but I thought it important to at least
Yeah,
give a
I want
treatment
to clarify
of
to the
it.
audience, all ports in Malaysia. Belongs to Malaysia. It's not owned by PRC,
Yeah,
and
so
it is
that's
not
the
managed by
issue.
PRC any port
Everything is
calls
managed from
in
Malaysia.
Malaysia.
Nicely stated. Nicely stated. You've cleared that air for those who were. Here's another one that you addressed before, but it probably could foot stomp here. And this is asking about combating Malacca piracy. And so it's asking, what measures are in place to combat piracy in Malacca Straits? And so you've indicated that this is well under control. And so maybe you might then just talk about how, the measures that you have in place that is keeping this at not an issue.
So, the measures is actually, as I stated earlier, we have air surveillance, we have coordinated patrol, we have joint patrol sometimes happening going on there, and looking at the way that the countries that is in the Malacca Strait patrol. Involved in the Malacca Strait Patrol geographically, as you can see, it's really effective. As I mentioned, those are the initiatives that we've done, and that those mechanism has been in place since we started it. So it has been proven effective, especially in terms of patrol information sharing and surveillance. So these three elements is key to how to
Yeah,
why
sometimes
actually
it
Malacca Strait
is
is
important to
safe nowadays.
reaffirm what you already know to be the case because sometimes it takes a little bit of effort and time, I think, for that to be recognized more broadly. And so some of
Yeah.
these questions.
So, okay. So basically, when we talk about Malacca Strait Patrol, I actually alluded earlier that it started as a three nation, you know, cooperation. But because of its effectiveness, Thailand participated, and that helps a lot. When you look at the geography of the Strait of Malacca, it's surrounded by these four nations. So without these four nations cooperating with each other, doing trolls, doing information sharing, doing surveillance
I think
together,
the response starts going
it
in,
would not have been effective.
We'll take just one last question because we're running out of time. But this is asking about this Coast Guard Navy border coordination that you've addressed. And so it's very much asking about, you know, how is the MMEA, the Malaysia Maritime Enforcement Agency, how is it that they coordinate with the Navy, the Royal Malaysian Navy, and this single border agency, which is fairly new? And how are they working together to enhance the border security? Maybe you might just address that a little bit, treat that a little bit.
Okay. When we talk about the new single border agency in enhancing our maritime security, they enhance in terms of intelligence sharing and operation coordination for border security. So these two are the elements that are being an additional elements of the existing mechanism that we already have. So when we talk about collaboration with enforcement agency like MMEA, and then we have the RMN, Royal Malaysian Navy. RMN provides high-end naval security, while MMEA will handle law enforcement and SAR operations. So we also have joint training exercises and shared patrol duties to improve our maritime security effectiveness. So when you have a joint training exercises, naturally it helps with
you're doing a tremendous job over this last
different
hour
agencies.
Helping the audience better understand Malaysia's very effective role in its maritime security area. And of course, because of its location there, the Malacca Straits, there's clearly a broader interest. And so thank you for helping us understand that. Before we let you go, I'd like to ask our guests to share a book recommendation that if our audience wants a little bit, know a little bit more, they may turn to. So thoughts, do you have a book that you might recommend?
Okay, I have the book. With me, I'm just reaching it out. So the title is Batting the Wave in the South China Sea. So this is the book. I think it's good reading, especially for people who doesn't know the background of what's Malaysia involvement is in South China Sea. So it's an, you know, it goes back to the story from the 80s when we actually deploy our naval force to secure contested area in the South China Sea. So this book tells you more about what was the stance like and how we came about to where we are right now. There's a history behind it. So to better understand, it's good to have
thank
this
you for that. I'll tell you,
for reading
Annie,
probably
you've made
before
this hour
bed.
Fun and fast. And so thank you for your time here.
Thank you, James, for inviting me. And thank you to the audience for actually participating as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, as we conclude today's dialogue, Malaysia navigates complex maritime challenges through resilience, technology, and regional partnerships. Strengthening its maritime shield is crucial, not just for Malaysia, but for the Indo-Pacific. These conversations shape security. So join us again on March 17th as I'll sit down with Dr. Srini Sitaraman, professor here at DKIA PCSS, to discuss India's strategic challenges, its evolving security landscape, regional tensions, and the future of its global role. On behalf of all of us at DKIA PCSS, thank you for being part of this important conversation. I'm James Minnick, and until we meet again, aloha hoi.
As always, the opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of DKIA PCSS, the U.S. Department of Defense, or the U.S. government.